League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's the Paul Gallant Show.
Pauly G Show, he's the best in Houston.
Houston's most interactive sports talk show.
Oh, what's good, my man?
Broadcasting live from Pleasure Pier Galveston as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
Heavens no. No Paul Gallant. It is Will Kunkel and Joe George with you today, filling in for the great Paul Gallant. We are live here at Cadillac Bar in the Heights. Come on down. Stop by. Say hello. Happy hour from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. So, well, 1 p.m. flits right on in there. Grab yourself a margarita. They've got great premium black Angus beef fajitas. Just had those. Absolutely fire. And by the way, on Mondays, they have Margarita Monday, $6 margs, 18 pitchers all day. On Tuesdays, aptly named Taco Tuesday, very creative, $5 tacos and tacos and fajitas Friday, that being tomorrow. Margarita pitcher and a half pound of chicken and beef fajitas for $39.99. Wait, what?
You're coming back tomorrow?
A pitcher? Can we we did this here on the wrong day, dude.
Yeah, I know.
A pitcher of margs and fajitas, half pound chicken and beef for $39.99.
That's a really good deal.
As they say, say less, fam. Say less. Will Kunkel here. Find me on the socials on X, Instagram, TikTok. My show when I was at Fox was called Kicking It with Kunkel. I have now carried that over to my own YouTube page. So I appreciate everybody that's followed me and continued to support. I had Cecil Shorts on the show last night talking about Texans training camp. And these boys, man, I tell you what, Joe, it's a different vibe around camp. I don't know that there was – you know what? Yeah, there was. There was a little bit of entitlement last year going into camp because they were coming off that good season. C.J. Stroud hadn't really faced any trials and tribulations in the NFL. The offense added Stephon Diggs. They added Joe Mixon, and it was like, man, we got this five-headed monster. C.J. Stroud went on the tour. He was on every podcast known to mankind.
Every podcast.
And they got their tail whipped a little bit offensively, kind of by themselves. And I'm not saying that's why, but that definitely permeated a little bit through the building of, you know, show up and we'll do our thing. Nah, man, there's a lot of work you got to put in, and it starts in training camp. And we've talked about this. Laremy Tunsil being gone, I think, is a good thing for this team because he did nothing that was voluntary. Never minicamp, never OTAs. He hardly even practiced during the regular season. He just wasn't out there. He didn't put in that effort. And the other guys kind of followed him a little bit. They didn't bust ass the way you need to. And this year, right now, so far through 2 days, that mindset, it's a lot more like D'Amico Ryan's than it is Bobby Slowick or Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's, I feel like I talked about this a lot last year, the podcast tour. It's like, it was going to bite you in the butt for CJ if you didn't play great. That you went on every podcast and told everyone how great you are and all these quarterbacks you're better than. And it was a lot. I mean, he was definitely feeling himself a little bit. And look, and D'Amico referenced it slightly in the last press conference of the season last year. And CJ has already talked this year about, you know, having a better idea of what it takes in the offseason and what the work that needs to be put in. So that's all. I mean, it's all positive. It's and last year, you had all the injuries. You had this five-headed monster. I think it's good that all that seems to have just kind of dissipated. And it's just more about, okay, what does this team actually look like on Sundays? It's not about hype from the media, hype from internally. It's just, okay, we had major problems, new coaches. How do you fix it? How do you be better? It just, the vibe coming off of camp so far and the offseason, this goes back to OTAs and everything as well, it's just that it's more about football. And I do feel like that was lost last year. I think that they, and I think rightfully so, they were feeling themselves. But there was a learning curve, a steep one, and people got fired for it.
And I'll say I had no problem with CJ going on that tour. Do your thing, talk your smack, but you also got to come back and know that you've now put a little bit of a target on your back, and you got to be that much better. And also everyone around you has got to be good enough for you to be able to go out there and strut. And Nick Caserio talked about this last year going into the season. He said, listen, what we did last year, saying it last year, means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. And then all the hype and all everything that you guys are saying means nothing. But it wasn't just us. It was the players, too, that fed into it. So Caserio has been through it. He's been in the league for 20-plus years now. And that's when you build your franchise around guys that has seen success like Caserio did with the Patriots, but also has seen failure and has been knocked down, has gotten back up, and knows what it takes to succeed every single year. That's when your franchise and your organization starts to build a culture, and they start to have that accountability. And D'Amico Ryans talked about that today. He said he was asked, like, kind of how have you grown? You're now delegating a little bit more. When did you have that realization that you wanted to do that? Like, what's different with you? He said the kind of the way to sum it up, what he said is that you have to change every single year. You can't come in and say, hey, the defense was really good last year. Let's keep it that way. No, you can't do that. You've got to grow. You've got to adapt. You've got to keep changing. Every single year, you've got to do something new because everybody watches your tape. Mm-hmm. It's a copycat league. Everybody knows what you're going to try to do again this year. And D'Amico knows that. D'Amico knows that he's got to keep evolving. Nick Caley. D'Amico talked about Nick Caley saying, this isn't a copycat offense. He's not copy and pasting his offense. Shots at Bobby Slowick.
For sure.
For sure, directly out.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I think was obvious. Like, that's what it's what it was. And that's why they couldn't pivot. What everything, like what you just said about what D'Amico talked about is changing every year. Bobby couldn't change because it's not his offense.
He couldn't change week to week.
Yes, it's why they always struggled in the first quarter. It's why they always had poor possessions the first drive of the game because everyone had figured out their offense. They had figured out CJ. They had figured out how they were using it. And then the injuries piled on top of it, for sure. But that's why he got fired. Because it's why he also didn't get a good job. Like, you could have said it was a personality thing, and maybe Bobby Slowick would have gone somewhere else and got an OC job. He's, what, the wide receivers coach and an offensive assistant for Mike McDaniels in Miami. Like, he didn't get a good job coming out of this. So, and that was a direct shot at Bobby, that it was copy and paste. And that's why I'm glad that the person that they hired in Nick Caley, while I'm not going to get overhyped about him because he's yet to call plays in the NFL, but he's bringing in something that's Patriots, Rams, McVay, McDaniels. Like, it's a little bit of everything. So, like, it should be his offense. And he talked about this when he first got hired, is that you have to build an offense around the players you have. Bobby Slowick last year, I felt like he had an offense and the Texans had to fit into it. And it didn't work. And so hopefully D'Amico is they're telling, you know, they are, like it looks different from, like, what we're seeing on the whiteboard, and now we can see it at some point here start to translate. I know we still got, what, a month and a half?
You have 18 practices left before we get to the preseason, let alone the preseason into the regular season. You need scars in this league to have success. You don't just come into the NFL, have success, never have issues, and just cruise. Like, it doesn't work that way. It's the same thing we were talking about with Bryce Matthews. Yeah, the dude's on fire right now. He ain't going to cruise, man. He's going to have scars, mental scars, physical scars, all of that. Bobby Slowick reminds me of Joe Brady. I covered Joe Brady when Joe Brady was named the offensive coordinator under Matt Rhule with the Panthers coming out of LSU as the passing game coordinator. He had never done it before. He had never been in the NFL. So for him to come in and just be like, nah, I got this, and Bobby had more experience than him, but Bobby never got punched in the face and then reacted to it. That was the issue. He couldn't adapt. He couldn't grow. He couldn't change. So Joe Brady, he gets fired as the offensive coordinator midseason on the bye week. I remember it vividly. He then goes to Buffalo, becomes the quarterback's coach, and then the interim offensive coordinator, and now the offensive coordinator 4 years later. But he's got all those scars. But what those scars are experience and learning. And how did Dable handle it? When he then left, when he made Josh Allen the dog that he is, he went over to the Giants. He then learned from other guys. Like, he learned and figured it out. That's what those scars are. So I'm hoping that if Bobby Slowick has the is able to check his pride and check his ego and say, I got to learn more. I got to learn. I've got a great foundation with what I learned from Kyle Shanahan. But I got to be me, too. I got to be me when I get punched in the face and how do I react. And now we're about to find out the same exact thing with Nick Caley. Mm-hmm. We don't know. Nick Caley could be Joe Brady, Bobby Slowick, whoever, 2.0. Who knows? But we're about to learn. Because everyone's trying to find the next Sean McVay, Kyle Shanahan, whoever it is. But so far, so good. But this is when everything is so far, so good.
Yeah, I mean, the best situation for the Texans this year would be that Nick Caley's so awesome that he's not your offensive coordinator next year. Because he's the head coach somewhere.
Yeah. I wish that that's the case.
Because that would mean the offense would be awesome this year. So, but yeah, that's
– I mean, remember, Bobby got looks.
I know.
Like mini looks as a head coach after his first mm-hmm. year as the offensive coordinator.
So it's if what happens week one when you play the Rams and you're playing a coaching staff that, you know, they lose guys all the time and obviously they're familiar with Nick Caley.
I'm about to say and knows what he knows.
Yeah. So it's like what does it look like in week one and then what does it look like in week two? What does it look like in week three versus week 10? That is going to be ultimately, I think, what sets this team apart because it felt like that's why the team couldn't evaluate or couldn't elevate themselves. Was they had a lot, I think they just had a lot more problems than we really realized last year. And I think a lot of fans put sunshine and rainbows on everything, and it's going to all be okay. Look what they did last year. But it was just the reality was is that it was stagnant. It didn't improve. They got hit in the mouth, and they didn't punch back. And that's, again, like that's what Nick Caley is. What does it look like from week one to week two? And when teams start to figure out your offense, whatever this is how do you adjust? That's why when he, you know, that football is football quote that we mentioned earlier from Bobby Slowick, that was talking about adjustments from the first half to the second half when he said it. He's like, well, football is football.
It's
like,
there are rarely adjustments in the second half. Well, like, bro, you haven't scored a touchdown in like 9 weeks in the second half. Yeah. You better adjust. Call the touchdown play.
Yeah, and he didn't have any touchdown plays.
Just crazy.
Yeah, he had nothing. So that's what the question is for Nick Caley. You know, that's the one thing I think from training camp you can't really get.
No.
You can't really see.
No, you can't. But what I do think we can see is at least try to compare the offense and how they look compared to last year just in regards to having any success.
Yeah.
Because I remember last year the offense was bad, and we were like, huh. And no one really thought too much of it early on because the defense was that good. We kind of knew that. And we were just like, all right, they're just kind of figuring things. But, like, at no point did any of us think that Stephon Diggs, Tank Dell, Nico Collins, C.J. Stroud, Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon weren't going to be good. Like, we knew they were going to be good. And then we found out they weren't any good.
Yeah.
But it takes you a long time to get off of that page in the book of this will work. Like, these names will work, and it just never did.
Yeah, Paul has this little notebook that he would take to camp every day, and he would come in, and we would start our show every day after camp, and he would just kind of go through his notes. And it was only when, I think, ESPN or the NFL Network came in, and they had, like, one good practice, it was, like, every day he would come into the show, and, like, it didn't look good again.
Yeah, it looked good one time when they were on the road in Ohio. The offense looked great, and it stood out, and that's when we were, like, maybe that's what it's supposed to look like.
Yeah.
And it never really did. And then we got in the regular season, and we were like, man, there were signs everywhere, but you're so hesitant because there's so many excuses. The playbook is – when I was – for instance, again, to just draw back on another experience, when I was in Carolina, it was Bryce Young's first season. It was Frank Reich's first season. And Frank Reich had such great success calling plays, whether he was with the Eagles or whether he was with the Colts. And we thought we knew it was going to work because it was after Matt Rhule, like, finally. And then the offense just looked so bad, but the excuses were it's preseason. The playbook is small. It's a rookie quarterback. Mm-hmm. And it was so bad, Frank's season. Frank didn't even live a year with the Panthers. It was so bad. Sometimes you just got to trust what's in front of you.
Yeah, and so if we see success at training camp this year, that will – you can't learn everything, but it will teach you something because – and look, it's a challenge. And I think that's also why a lot of times people gave the offense a pass last year and why they could get a pass this training camp is because of how good the defense is going to be. It's a Super Bowl caliber defense.
It's the best deodorant there is right there is that defense.
But the offense has to win some matchups.
Yes.
You have to have some success. That's probably the what we're looking for as the pads start to come on more and they really start to go ones versus ones and things like that. How much better does the offense look this year versus last year? Because if it's the same, where last year it was all bad and everyone kind of gave it a pass, that's not going to happen. And there will be a different tone heading into the Texans season this year. Because if it's just every day the Texans offense struggles, I think people will be mightily concerned.
Well, they're not going to have the honeymoon phase.
It's over.
To like, oh, yeah, we got all the dudes. I mean, week one, drive one, I promise you, X, for whatever it's worth, if it's three and out again, here we go again with this crap. Here we go again with this.
The expectations are raised in the city. It's just, it's different. The Texans have won two playoff games and lost two playoff games in the last 2 years. You've got the best team in baseball every single year, basically, rolling out there. And then you got this guy named Ime Udoka taking the Rockets to the number two team in the Western Conference. Mm. And you've added Kevin Durant. The bar has been raised for Houston sports in an awesome way. And you're right. If it's three and out the first drive, I'm like,
It's that PTSD that comes back.
My advice to Nick Caleb would be to throw it on the first play of the game. Don't.
You know what? Don't throw a wide receiver screen.
Yeah.
Nick, if you're listening, do not throw a wide receiver screen. Yeah. I swear to God.
Don't hand it off. Don't throw a screen. I don't care if it's a pick. Just, like, throw it 80 yards down the field to Nico Collins. Just, like, Bobby Slowick's gone. It's not going to be a run play every first down. Like, just.
Whatever you do.
Breathe.
Call the successful play.
Yes.
Just put it that way. Run it. But run it for 8 yards. Like, whatever you're going to do, call the play that works.
Yeah, I think that's another one, too, where with Nick Caley is really interesting to me is the early game stuff that you can't really replicate right now. You can a little bit, but you're like, what is your 10-20 play sequence to start a game look like? Because that's also where Bobby Slowick came up really short was, he had a plan. It was a poor plan. So what does that look like, and how do you adjust immediately in games? I don't know. I hope the best for them this year because last year was definitely they won their games. I won my money on my over ticket with the Texans, but they still fell short in a big way.
There's so much left on the table. That's the front. Like there is nothing worse in sports. The P word in sports is the worst word. Potential. This team last year had the potential. Potential is synonymous with getting your ass kicked every single night. It means you're not living up to what you're supposed to be, what the fans think you're supposed to be, or what you think you're supposed to be. They know that they were better from a roster standpoint than what they put on paper last year and what they put on film. This year, the potential is there. So as much as we talk about it and Nick Caseri wants to say, like, it's all fodder,
man,
like, he said it too. He said, I know we have a good team. It's a matter of executing. It's a matter of what we do on Sundays. And that's the key, is actually putting it all together and not just having potential, but having success.
Is the roster better, you think, this year? Like on just looking at a piece of paper?
I think it's a better puzzle. Like, it's a more completed puzzle.
Yeah.
I think, so I talk about this all the time, that in basketball you want to have, of course, you want to have the five best pieces, but if those five pieces don't fit together, all you got are five pieces that don't belong to that puzzle, and you therefore don't have a puzzle. I think they obviously lost Stephon Diggs. They don't have Tank Dell, and they don't have Laremy Tunsil. Those are all three really good pieces. I don't think that those pieces are what you want in this puzzle. They might belong in another puzzle somewhere else at the store, but not in this one. So I think their puzzle is more complete now than last year, albeit different, less exciting pieces, if you will.
Yeah, Christian Kirk does not have the excitement that Diggs had, but like we've seen in Jacksonville and in the past, like he can be an exciting player. You know, you have two rookies in Higgins and Noel that you can feel excited about on this offense. You have Cade Stover, and then you have a huge question mark at offensive line. But you have a ton of options to figure out like who goes together the best. So I think on paper, like the offense is worse.
It is. There's so much more unknown. So you have two rookies that you're expecting or hoping are going to contribute. That's not like you knew Stephon Diggs was going to be a pretty good wide receiver. You kind of knew that Tank Dell was going to be a good receiver. You don't know what Jalen Noel and Jaden Higgins are going to be. Like you don't know. You hope.
Yeah, you hope. I mean, and you invested in them. You gave one of them a fully guaranteed contract that basically shut down the NFL. It felt like for until the day before training camp started. Yeah, so it's. I think there's more questions, but it's what you said earlier and what you just said now again is the potential is, I think, is higher. The ceiling feels higher. Because even like Diggs, we all kind of knew he was slowing down a little bit. And you can make the same argument about Christian Kirk, but I don't know. I just
and he has trouble staying healthy.
Trevor Lawrence, yeah.
Like, God,
I kind of want to give. I'm kind of giving Christian Kirk a little bit of the benefit of the doubt of like what it was. Maybe more like his first year in Jacksonville, but yeah, he struggles to stay healthy. But you have these young guys like they could, you know, by the end of the season, really piece it together, and you know, and Nick Caserio, I think to his credit, like while some of the injuries have not have hurt the draft players, the players drafted themselves, he's done a really good job evaluating wide receivers in the draft. Mm. Tank Dell is a home run pick. It's just unfortunate what's happened with his career. Nico Collins is maybe the best value draft pick Nick Caserio has ever made, and maybe will ever make, honestly. He's top five receiver in the NFL, basically, mm-hmm. and they got him in, what, the third round? It's so Nick Caserio's done a good job. You can't blame him for Mechie. He's got contributions from Hutchinson. So you got Higgins and Noel. If he can evaluate them like he did the previous guys, it's exciting. Like of what I can't wait to see the two Iowa State kids on the field this year.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be ups and downs. It's going to be one of those a little bit of a roller coaster. They're rookies. That's just the way it works. But that is why it is so important for the offense, Nick Caley and the offensive line, to buy into the personality, because the personality isn't to let those guys really shine. The personality is to have that run game, and then they can feed and eat off of the run game. That's what's going to give C.J. Stroud more time, and he's going to allow him to perform and those receivers to have time and to perform as well, as if the running game gets going. This is not a run or a pass first, then run offense. Like we can't rely on the Iowa State kids to be studs. What we can do is set them up for success because of the run game. And that's the situation we're in now.
Yeah, and what's the vibe you've gotten around camp about Mixon?
He's not out there.
Yeah.
Like he's nowhere out there. I haven't heard anything that says he's not gonna be ready for the season. I think he'll be ready. But I will say Nick Chubb looks pretty good. I put a video out on my YouTube channel, Kicking It with Kunkel, and like he looks good. Like he looks ready to roll. And everyone can look good in this situation,
sure.
Right? But he does for real look like he's gotten over the I got to get back year, which he had last year.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think it's the rear removed from the rehab year. Now he's ready.
Yeah, and you had a guy like a name like Nick Chubb. It definitely sends some red flags up about the health of Joe Mixon. But look, if you're going to run the ball the way that they're talking about, you need two running backs. Joe Mixon had no help last year.
And he was never on the field on third down.
Yeah.
This will allow one of them, hopefully Joe, mm-hmm. to be on the field on third down as well.
And you also have the, what is it, Woody Marks, too?
Yeah, Woody. So,
I'm very curious about.
Whoo, I'll tell you what, man. Two players that we mentioned here, Jaden Hittigans and Woody Marks. Cecil Shorts on Kicking It with Kunkel last night was obsessed with
really?
Ariante Ursary, Jaden Higgins, and Woody
Marks.
Obsessed with. Loved the way Jaden ran routes. He thinks he's going to be an absolute star. He thinks that Ariante Ursary, the way he plays, is going to fit perfectly into the system. And he is beyond excited to see what Woody can do as well, the way he plays. Those are the three names that Cecil, and I mean, Cecil was gushing. I mean, not like, typically guys are like, yeah, but like it's different once we play games, bro. No, Cecil was excited about those dudes.
Yeah, it just adds another potential weapon for Nick Caley. Like, that's what, they've brought in a bunch of, they've given him a bunch of chess pieces. And it's just about figuring out which ones work the best together, how you want to use them creatively, and if CJ can stay upright to get him the ball. I mean, again, like I'm with you. I'm taking the over this year, 9.5. I think their schedule is pretty favorable. Like there's obviously some tough teams on it, but like they're going to win their division. I don't think there's even a question about it. And that's why still after you know 1 year, the expectation for it, to me is still to go. You got to go farther than you went last year. You might not get there, but like the expectation should be that at least for me.
Let's take a break now here on ESPN Houston 97.5, 92.5. After the break, I talked to Titus in press conference fashion. I asked him like four or five questions about this offensive line. I asked him, does this group have the desire to actually be physical? And right now, schematically under Nick Caley and being coached by Cole Popovich, what's the biggest difference from this year to last year that will allow you to have success? He answered these questions, to his credit, very specifically. If we don't have the sound, I'll tell you exactly what he said on the other side of the break. Will Kunkel and Joe George filling in for Paul Gallant here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. We're at the Cadillac Bar come on down and say hi to us in the Heights.
You're listening to The Paul Gallant Show
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from Cadillac Bar in the Heights as part of ESPN Houston's Summer Circuit.
Presented in part by our grand prize sponsor, Power On E-Bikes.
From the Mobile Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant.
No Paul Gallant today. Will Kunkel and Joe George coming your way. We've got some Titus Howard sound we're going to get to in just a little bit, but we are live at HR. Chime in, call, text, I don't care how you do it, whatever you want. HRP hotline, 713-780-3776. Let's get right into this because I don't want to say I grilled Titus Howard, but I did ask him a whole bunch of questions about this offensive line, and Titus Howard is the elder statesman. I believe outside of Kyhemi Fairbairn, he is the longest tenured Texan now on this team. He's certainly the elder statesman in that offensive line room. Here's him talking about the older guys and how they've got to set the example for this team.
It's up to us older guys to establish that for the younger guys. And I think that's one of the things I'm trying to do is just being a positive example every day of, you know, how – you know, we got to go about our business every day. So when a younger guy see that, they're like, oh, man, that's how I got to be. And then that just rubs off on the whole offensive line.
And now that's Titus Howard's job. I don't know if he's going to be the lead dog leader in that room or not. It's certainly his de facto to start the season. I don't know if he's going to stay there or not. I'm not saying he won't. But with Laremy Tunsil gone, now you have guys that can show you the way this needs to get done if Titus Howard so chooses to be that guy. And they have to have that. Like Laremy Tunsil again. He wouldn't be practicing right now in training camp.
He's not right now.
Yeah, he's not.
I'm sure he's not. I'm sure he's not.
I wonder. I got to ask somebody down there with the Commanders. I do have some people that I know. Like that's not the example you want to set when you're putting in a new system and you're trying to revamp that offensive line room. You can't have that in there. And now it falls to Titus Howard. And now he doesn't have to be too cool for school. What he needs to be is too physical to be put on the bench. That's his job now. So I also asked him, what's the difference, though? Because we hear all this, and you could say all the great things and say all the right things at the podium, but if you don't go out there and do it, who gives a damn? It's completely useless. It's lip service. So what's the difference this year in the O-line's mentality in camp versus last year? Because last year you said all the right things, too, and you're doing it again. So what's different?
The scheme is a lot more simple. I was in this scheme a little bit when I first came into the league. But it's really just, I think the biggest thing with Nick and Cole is the mindset. Like, you know, our mindset last year wasn't like it is this year. Like, our mindset now is we got to get downhill. We got to get on guys early and move them. And that's something that we struggle with on the offensive line of the pass is getting the run game going. Because you get the run game going, the pass game going to get going. You know, so we got to be able to establish that run early. And they just been attacking the details of the run game of getting double teams a lot. We're going to be doing a lot of double teams. So we're just working on those fundamentals every day and trying to get better.
Bro, I cannot tell you how bad that is to hear they struggled with the mindset last year. That is ingrained as a human being of a successful lineman, that your mindset is de facto set to default to move bodies and be physical. That I'll never forget, in a couple locker rooms, after the game on the road, I can't remember the one in particular that I'm thinking of, but they had success running the ball, and I asked Juice Scruggs what kind of pride this room takes in being able to move bodies, and I didn't get the – and this isn't a Juice knock. It's just more of a knock on the culture of that room. I didn't get the answer of, oh, hell yeah, we love that. It was more like, yeah, it was good to see success there. It was like, oh, damn. So, like, to have that and struggle with that mindset's crazy.
Yeah, I think talking about the attitude change and everything, honestly, one of the things that I think we'll tangibly see if it's different with Titus and his leadership as, like, the veteran statesman of the offensive line group is where is he? Where is he after the game?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's something that Laremy would do. He would hide. He would hide, and he would not be there, and he would be in the shower, or he'd dip out, and he wouldn't answer questions. And Titus kind of followed that last year. I mean, I know that's, like, one of Paul's, like, biggest complaints is that, like, there would be media members that would want to speak to offensive linemen, and they would not be anywhere to be found last year. So, like, that's another one, too, where it's, like, I think there's a lack of account. Not that we hold them accountable, but I think by speaking to the media, you're holding yourself accountable in games that you struggle. So, I mean, they're saying the right things. It sounds good. Now we just got to wait and see if it plays out that way. But they're saying the right things for sure.
This was my biggest gripe with Laremy Tunsil. And it has nothing to do with us as media, like, oh, why do you need to talk to them? No, dude, it has nothing to do with us. It has to do with Laremy protecting his teammates. If he answers our questions, then all of a sudden Jarrett Patterson and Juice Scruggs and those guys aren't left out to dry to answer our questions of, so 52 sacks, that sucks. Couldn't get the running game. So, like, what's going on? What's wrong? If Laremy was the leader, a true leader, wearing that C, not just stapled onto his chest, but truly acting like one, then he would be up there taking extreme ownership, taking the bullets, and taking the shrapnel to protect his teammates. That's a great point, Joe, for is Titus Howard going to be there doing that if things go awry? Will he be that one, or will he have learned from Laremy, like, nah, I'm all good on this? Now, they did talk to us, but they never did it on camera.
Yes.
They
yes.
would speak. They would kind of do it on background. They would do it to, like, some reporters.
Yeah.
They wouldn't go on camera. But listen, bro, you got to go on camera. You got to do it all. It's part of it.
Yeah.
It's part of protecting your teammates. It's not about the marketing. It's not about us wanting to make drama out of it. It is about them protecting their teammates. And I brought this up this because I felt so strongly about this, as you could probably tell. And I brought this up with Cecil Shorts on Kicking It with Kunkel, and he said, man, I can't tell you how much that would piss me off if I was in that locker room. If my quarterback dips, although they're mandated by the league to go to the podium after every game, a quarterback has to be there. But if a guy like that dips and doesn't take responsibility and is, one, a captain, two, the proverbial leader in that room, like, that is trying to piss me off, because now we got to answer it. Like, who the hell am I?
Yeah.
Why do I have to answer this? This isn't my job. That's his. You're getting the millions for it, dude.
The other thing for, like, this offensive line to prove to me from a visual thing of, even if there's not success always running the ball or protecting CJ, is protecting CJ in the other way. When he's on the ground, where is your offensive line? Because I know Titus has gotten a little chippy with Jeremy Branham on Twitter, as did Laremy Tunsil, because Jeremy would go at them pretty hard for CJ be on the ground, and there wouldn't be an offensive lineman within 10 feet of him helping him off the ground. Think back to the Broncos game 2 years ago when CJ's face-to-face with the Broncos player. Where are his teammates? That's the other thing with the offensive lineman I want to see be different, to where, like, even if there's not tangible success and CJ's still getting hit a lot because of skill, there are things that they can just do differently that, like, I think we'll all be able to see a tangible difference in the offensive line with this new group, if there really is a new culture, if there is a new accountability. There are things they just didn't do last year that, like, they can just change from a mindset. So they're saying the right mindset stuff. Now we just got to see, like I want to see what happened to the Lions today, happened to the Texans. Dan Campbell had to cancel practice today, ended early. Too many fights. Too many fights.
Hell yeah.
If Will Anderson or Danielle Hunter, they squeak through and they might hit CJ a little too hard on accident, I want to see some video from the fans of a little scrap going on.
Don't punch him in the face. Just hit him with your palm in their face mask.
That's the dumbest thing athletes do in all professional sports is throw punches when there's helmets on.
But you know what?
I don't understand it.
I'd rather that than nothing.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean,
but it's got to hurt, Will.
I'm not going to cherry pick, like, throughout the season of where an offensive lineman should have been at CJ's back,
sure,
or not.
Sure.
But I will say this. Dude gets sacked 52 times. He didn't take one dirty punch, one dirty hit, one dirty nothing. Like, none? None? Come on, man. Of course it happened.
Yeah.
And to your point, that is ingrained. That is culture. That is personality. So if they're truly changing the personality and the culture in that room with the offensive lineman, that will spill out. That's why I've called. I did a long piece of it, I think 21 minutes, of me going nuts on CJ Stroud on Kicking It with Kunkel. Find me on YouTube. another shameless plug. He's got to be that leader, too. He's got to get in his offensive lineman's face and say, guys, like, where are y'all? Why 52 sacks? I'm not saying every 52 times, but one time he's got to air them out. Like, you think that frustration would spill over just one time. So that culturally has got to change as well. So here's Titus now. I asked him, what's the difference with Cole Popovich? Because D'Amico has talked about he loves what Cole is doing. Okay, you can say that, and you can say that's great because you want to back up the dude that you hired after you fired Chris Strausser. So here's what Titus said on them having to take the coaching and what the coaching is from Cole.
Just taking the coaching. Taking what we're doing, being coached on, and just applying it to the field. I mean, I know it sounds simple, but, you know, a lot of times when guys mess up, it's just like we just go do our own thing versus not doing the thing that we was coached to do. So everybody just been putting their head down, working every day individual on the things we need to work on, and then just going out of the team each day, setting a goal for the day, and just attacking that goal.
Bro, that is – if any coach is listening to what he just said, the quote, if we didn't do what we were coached, we would, quote, go off and do our own thing. That screams horrible leadership. No leadership, no accountability. The standards, if they were even set, who gives a damn what the standards were if you're not holding people to the standards? Mm-hmm. For a guy to say last year that we would just go off and do our own thing, like, part of you has to be embarrassed. That's embarrassing to say.
Remember, what it reminds me of is, remember when we found out that Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant would hold their own practices with the Brooklyn Nets after Steve Nash was done with them because they didn't get anything out of it? And, like, it's Steve Nash out there, but they would go do their own thing after practice. Like, that's what it reminds me of hearing that. So, look, again, I said this earlier. I think it was a bold move to keep Cole Popovich when your offensive line has struggled in the way that it did. And they must have some general faith that he can get it. And I think part of that has to be the guys who were there. What they were talking about in that quote there from Titus is, like, they must believe still from last year that Cole was still providing them something, that Strausser was not. Like, if the players didn't buy into Cole, you have to make the change.
And I think Cole probably's personality matches.
Yeah, yeah.
And D'Amico trusts
that
he's going to fall in line. Not in fall in line, but get on the same page. As D'Amico has noted several times, we all got to be on the same page.
Yeah, and that definitely feels like that was missing because – so this is where it's just going to be – and it's going to be, again, the offensive line is the most interesting group because there's so many combinations, so many guys who can step up, who can fill that role, who can be day one starters as rookies or second year guys. I mean, this might be one of the younger offensive lines in the league, or it could be one of the oldest. I mean, you could have Cam Robinson and Laken Tomlinson, all these guys who have been in the NFL for quite a handful of years, or you could have a first year left tackle and a second year right tackle, you know, going from the get go. Like, you can really swing this thing in one or two directions depending on how camp plays out. So, I mean, look, they got to take the coaching that comes in front of them and cross our fingers, if you're a Texans fan, that it's good coaching.
And he also, I asked him schematically what's different. Is this easier?
Yeah.
And he said it is an easier scheme, but something that you just said that it permeates, not only is the offensive line, defensive line the most important position group in all of football because you win and lose games in the trenches, but again, I know we're hammering this, that personality and that culture in those rooms permeates through the rest of the team. So if you have a nitty-gritty offensive line, that spills over to the rest of the offense. Defensively is more of a full unit. Like, they work so much together that if you have a tough-ass defense, like, that kind of spills over to the team as well. So, but that offensive line, if they're able to set that tone with that culture, the other guys will fall in line. Because if they're a soft pass blocking, like, first, no run, then they talk more like this.
Well, we saw it last year. I mean, last year, everything we're saying about what you want this offensive line to be is exactly what the defensive line was. And it set the tone.
100%.
It set the tone. And the offensive line was soft. There's no other way to put it. They were soft and not good at their jobs. And the defense was incredible at their jobs and tough sons of guns. And, like, it just took two. It was really, like, it was, it's fascinating. Like, it was two different football teams. Like, there was, like,
that's a good way of paying, 100%.
Two different teams.
Because if something went wrong defensively, you knew that Will Anderson, D'Amico Ryans, Jalen Petrie, Azeez Al-Shaair was going to go to whoever screwed up and was like, hey, bud, that's not the way we do things on this side of the building. If someone on the offense did, like, a field trip to the defensive side of the room, they'd go back and look like a ghost. They'd be like, oh, my God, those dudes are nuts.
Yeah.
They're insane over there. They get on you about everything. Their attention to detail is so exhausting and so intense. Yes, but then when it comes to game time, you don't think anymore.
Can I don't want to be too negative towards D'Amico here.
No, let's do it.
But is there anything that, as we're talking through this, about that, like that cultural difference that I think D'Amico needs to be better at that then. Like, it's his team.
Well, I think that's when the hiring of Nick Haley and Cole Popovich coming. Because as a head coach, the way I see it is you're either offensive or defensive, right?
Yeah.
Like, you're not both. You don't have your handprints on both. It's one or the other.
Yeah.
He's obviously a defensive guy. Where his handprints come into your point is the CEO role.
Mm-hmm.
So he's now got to hire guys that are a mirror image of him and his personality that will emulate that culture.
Yeah.
And he's got to be the CEO to hire Nick Haley and Cole Popovich to do that.
Yeah, even though they're very Casario hires, it feels on paper.
Maybe.
Patriots tutelage.
Either way,
like
they
that.
Have to mirror D'Amico.
Well, you got
to
figure, yeah,
no
exactly.
matter what.
100%. And that's why it's the defense, there's almost no questions. It's just a question of health and, like, just figuring it out. Even last year when they weren't healthy at times, like, they still figured it out. It didn't matter who was out there. They still played the same tone, the same level all the time. It's just, can the offense – can they catch up? Like, can they be what the defense is? Can they run the ball the way they say they're going to run it? Can they block it the way they say they're going to block it? Like, and can CJ just really get command of this offense in the way that he needs to? Like, I always thought the S2 stuff was stupid and overblown.
Same.
But, like, if it's not, him having more command is where we would see it. But I think it's overblown. But you know, it's like, it's just, they have to have a totally different team, and that's where, like, again, like Dan Orlovsky said yesterday on McAfee, that they're going to be, said the Texans are going to be awesome this year. I think they can.
They have the potential
to
be awesome.
Sure.
Defense, we know that. The question with the defense is, what are they forced to do by the offense? Are they forced to defend short fields all the time? Are they forced to be, you know, if your pie chart of a football team is three parts, your special teams, offense, defense, is the defense forced to be 75%, 80% of that pie chart?
Mm-hmm.
That's just too much. You want them maybe 60%, fine. And if the offense can be 40% or 30% and then 10% special teams, then you're starting to cook. And if the less you can take off the plate of the defense, the better team you're going to be, because the defense will be good. It's a matter of what are you requiring of them.
I also want to, like, I want to see those games where the Texans get big leads, because the idea that you could have Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter, like, facing Matt Stafford,
ooh,
and the Rams are down 14 points, and just they have to throw the ball
back
on every play, like, what they can do to quarterbacks. I mean, you're like, I the other wager I have on the Texans this year, I have a Will Anderson Defensive Player of the Year ticket already for this year.
I like that.
I was like, I feel
trying
like
to think who else there would be.
I mean, T.J. Watt, of course, is
right.
going to be
well,
up there.
Right.
Miles Garrett.
I just mean on the Texans.
Oh, like, the Texans, yeah.
Because I don't think Derek Stingley can be in that category, because I just don't think he's going to get targeted enough to get the interceptions.
I agree.
I think Kalen Bullock, I think, would be my sneaky one, only if he ends up with like 7-8 picks and he's able to play ball hawk. And just Kamari Lassiter, Derek Stingley lock their guy down, and Kalen sneaks in and grabs like 7 or 8 of those suckers.
Yeah, but I think we're going to see I think we already saw it this last year, but
I think it's a great
big breakout. But I think, like, the superstar, you know, I mean, look, I've seen some of these top 100 lists that have been coming out, and they're crazy with where they've got Will Anderson at. I think he's going to, like, in like the mid 40s. And I'm like, I feel like that's low, but
it's early in his career, I suppose.
Yeah.
But he is awesome.
He is the Terminator is a fantastic nickname for him.
Go back to the offensive side of the ball and their culture and how I want to see it emulate on the field. Do you remember the clip last year? Justin Herbert kind of took a cheap shot by somebody. I can't remember who it was. And Bradley Bozeman, their center, who I know from, again, when he was with the Panthers, awesome dude. He grabbed that defender, threw him off of Nick or off of Justin Herbert, and threw him into the ground. And I mean, got a penalty, but like defended his dude's honor. Like, that's what I need to see at least once, sometime. Like, it's football. That stuff happens.
And I hope it comes from Titus.
Hell
I hope we see like that meanness come. I mean, look, Titus is in an interesting spot where, I mean, he's got some pretty hefty dead cap stuff, but if I was Titus Howard, I would be looking at what just happened with Laremy Tunsil and being like, huh, the Texans, they're going to make culture moves. So it's like, if he doesn't buy in,
exactly.
Like he's the guy where his Texans career, it could be on the line this year, where it's like, if they're like, well, you know what, we got to get guys that fit our personality, our scheme, our culture, and you've already got rid of Laremy. If Titus doesn't change his traits, now it sounds like he's speaking as if it has, about setting the example and the tone and everything like that, but he's the one where it wouldn't, like, he's got to play well this year. If not, it's going to be very logical that you look at the draft and they're picking in the mid-20s this year where guards typically go off the board, and you're talking about, are they drafting Titus Howard's replacement in next year's draft? I mean, he is one of the starters on this team that I would say is in the most jeopardy of not being a Texan. So, yeah, I'd love to see Titus be the guy that, like, week one, Jared Verse hits CJ a little hard, and it's Titus that is in the face of Verse already week one of the season.
And what's interesting with Titus is that he's actually good enough that he'll have value on the market.
Yeah.
So if Laremy can be traded, Titus can certainly be traded,
sure.
And there might be enough value there where it could be worth it if he doesn't want to fit in and play the culture change game with the Texans. So if the Texans are willing to get rid of Laremy Tunsil, everybody's on the chopping block.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody's available to be gone. And Titus, you can't just turn around and trade, you know, not to pick on anybody, like a Drew Scruggs or Jarrett Patterson or Blake Fisher. They don't have much value as much as Titus Howard. Like, he's probably a better lineman than they are. So he's got some value. So, like, he can be traded if he doesn't fit in personality-wise.
For sure. I mean, he's got a big year in front of him. I mean, this is a big change. He's going to be a full-time guard, which I'm still a little surprised at. Like, I thought there would be a chance he'd play tackle, but it seems like he's a guard for this team. So clearly their evaluation says that what he is. But, I mean, he's really one of the – it feels like a make-or-break player for this team, where if, you know, your right side of your line is Titus and Fisher or Titus and your rookie, Titus is a big part of it. Like, he is going to be – I think a huge piece of why this team either succeeds beyond expectations or what they've done in the past, or kind of stays stagnant in a way.
I love what they're doing with the offensive line, and we can get into that, what they're doing with the offensive line on the other side of the break here. We're live here at Cadillac Bar in the Heights. Come out, say hello, happy hour, 11 a.m. to 7 p.m. And this deal I just found, this is for tomorrow. So come on out today and come on out tomorrow as well. This deal is absurd. Cadillac Bar in the Heights, tequila and fajitas Friday. Margarita pitcher and half-pound chicken and beef fajitas for $39.99. That is what's up. Find me on X, Instagram, TikTok, my show, Kicking It with Kunkel on YouTube. I'm Will Kunkel, Joe George with me. Come let us know your thoughts on HRNP hotline 713-780-3776 or you can watch us on YouTube. We got any other streams? We got Twitch?
Yeah, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Our app, as always, you can get there as well.
And to answer your question on YouTube, what is that room that everyone keeps taking pictures of? It's, you know, food influencers taking pictures back there here at Cadillac Bar in the Heights. Come on out, hang out. Will Kunkel, Joe George here at Cadillac Bar. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about Titus Howard and this offensive line a little bit more.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.